very long way away at the back, and some a long way away over other parts of the internet. I've got an attendance list here, getting through the agenda to item zero. For just these bits of admin first. I'm going to pass the attendance list round. Please, will you notice that if you say anything, there are in principle people listening somewhere else, and you better be at a microphone and say who you are so that it makes sense to them, please. If you have a very, very noisy mobile phone or, I don't know, bird scare or whatever you have, please use your judgment. I'll pass this round starting over here, and if you could just get it round. Okay, the usual very, very brief administrivia. We have a scribe from Ripon CC. Thank you. Sorry, I just hadn't noticed you coming. That's all done. Thank you. I'll pass you on the list. The agenda, I'll come back to in just a minute. There are some minutes from the last meeting. I suppose the other thing I ought to say is that this agenda script is on the right web pages at the place that I put up first. I'm going to just wind back to the first slide because I've written it down there. And this is in particular for anybody who's not in the room. On the right web pages, it's https://ripe/meetings/ripe-52. That bit's easy. Then it comes presentations/uploads/, and you're all right if you know it's Wednesday from there on. I'm sorry, I have to say that for people who can't already see it. Get there in the end, sorry, too fast. Right, there are, if you can see that, there are some minutes from the previous meeting, which I'm sure everybody's read very carefully. They were beautiful notes that I didn't mostly write. They just said what we did, there's no great issues there. Nobody responded to them when I put them round, so that's fine. I apologise on behalf of Sabri Barisha, who again can't be here. We move on. Now what I've done, I'm going to wind this back to show the full amazing range of the agenda items. The idea is, it's even to one before, I've lost the place. This is the one. There are some items that go all the way down there, but the idea is to do something substantive first, and then we can rab it on for the rest of the time allowed, which we usually manage to do quite well. Would like to just get some things said and decided and moved on this time about a priority item which I've stuck in next, which is, as you might have guessed, updating the BCP we have in the right document store. So that's where I'm going next, and then I'll come back to the other things for which we shall have, you know, time to do whatever people want to do. I've left an AOB item. Is there anything that anybody knows already I haven't mentioned and they want to talk about? To ask questions or whatever? Okay, in that case, you have only yourselves to blame. You know what happens. We end up talking about the same thing very easily. We usually talk about filtering or something of that nature, and that's okay, that's what people want to talk about, but if we can build some consensus on various things there, that's all right. But it does mean that we don't easily pick up a new direction at that stage, so that's why it's worth thinking about now if you want to. I had actually raised one or two things in discussion of the document update. Right, sorry to be flicking backwards and forwards from these pages. Okay, so I'm going to launch on this. Haven't slipped a minute yet. All right. Do people know what this thing is? Somewhere, says he, I have... Oh, that's where the original is. You can do better than that. So I'm just skipping ahead briefly because... Now, there it is. That URL down at the bottom is where there's an uploaded copy of the... slightly marked up with some changes you can find. So if you were looking at nothing else but just sort of gazing at that for a while, that would be okay. Now back to what I thought was worth saying about it. You'll find that easily enough if you start looking. Right. There's a thing called Rank 206. It's about 3 or 4 years old. It was based on the a BCP document for ISPs from the Lynx at the time, the Lynx in London. It wasn't bad at all. It said some very fierce things, which some people hated, and some people didn't do, and some people did do. But it's a useful, useful record to have of what is good practice in some respects. Things have moved on. The good things have moved on, and so have the bad things. And really, I think we need to say some slightly different stuff. Well, the Lynx think we ought to say some different stuff as well, so that the document which we started from has been updated, and I believe we should update the right document in at least a similar way. We have got two options, wherever it says. I'll come back to that in a minute. That's what there is. We could actually say, oh, these are some good ideas. We can write a wonderful BCP document. This is down the bottom. You know, we can improve on this. We haven't actually managed to do that. People don't leap at me saying, this is three new paragraphs that we really ought to put in a BCP document. If it happens this week, that's fine, we'll do it. But I've said that that's later. So what we're actually going to do at the moment is the minimum changes we need to do to this thing to make it look like a right document. At the moment it looks a little bit UK-centric, I'll say that. And then just drop it into the right policy development process and it'll sort itself out. Right, back to the previous one. That's where the original is. You don't actually need to look at that. All the words from it are in the thing I've uploaded to the meeting website, but none of the formatting. The changes are, now remember, we are proposing to update an existing RIPE document. There are not many serious changes. Remember, this is not brand new, and the things that that the Lynx folk thought they ought to get in was stuff that says you're also a spammer if you pay somebody else to do the spamming for you. That's that first one, hosted websites and stuff like that. You're also a spammer if somehow or other you host the tools that people use. Now, the world has moved on from there, I know. We don't see a lot of that these days. But all the same, it's a point worth making. And so those were two things that were added. There's also a clear statement that you've got to have some sensible way of tracing an abuse contact through the Whois database. In our context, the right database. And I know there are some issues about that which we'll come to later. But it doesn't concern this document. The document just says you've got to have these things, and how you have them is our problem. And there's a little thing which again, no, I think this one probably still is true. If you, the last but one, must not insist on web submission of things, that has been a big deal some of the time. If you are a consumer, you just try writing to your own ISP's abuse address, let alone somebody else's. They just don't want to know. You'll be invited to fill in a web form. The unfortunate, that's probably appropriate for consumers. It's done because consumers do not want to pay for anything better. For interactions between service providers, that's really not very clever. You've got a form of reporting things. It's just plain text, and to have to somehow break it up into bits for somebody else's web form just isn't what you wanted to do. And this records that notion. I realise that again, the world has moved on. There are feedback loops of various kinds with various, particularly the bigger providers now. However, the decision at this point is that we don't today try and write new stuff. We're just going to make sure that the old stuff, that the stuff that's there, is not actually wrong. May not be the best, but it's okay for now. And there are some other little changes down the bottom, one or two typos discovered. It's amazing how a repetition of a small word can go unnoticed by, you know, hundreds of people who read a document carefully. Okay. So, as I say, the proposal is that we don't do anything difficult. We just get these 20 people, 20, 30 people, to say, this is okay, we'll do it. And then we have to go through the policy development process, which means essentially waiting 8 weeks. Well, somebody has to do some things during those 8 weeks, but if nobody does anything much, it all turns out in about 8 weeks. And we'll, I'll mention this other possibilities later on. Oh no, I'll mention one of them now. The very bottom one, feed things back to the links. Links have actually got, you know, they've got some ownership of this thing. And if we do come up with anything better, we probably ought to do the decent thing and give them some new, better material so we can feed back to them later. Okay, now, the stuff is there. Anybody who wants to look at it and read it on the spot is quite welcome to do so. It's a lot of words, so I don't believe anybody who isn't already familiar with it is going to come up with a sensible comment in public. I'd be delighted to be proved wrong. Does anybody want to go through it on the screen? That's good. In that case, just notice, the nature of the markup is very simple. I've just made some pink and yellow marks so that you can see the bits that have been added, because one or two substantive bits have been added, as I said, and the bits that have been changed in a rather informal way. And so you can find what we're actually signing up to. It's not very much at the moment. Right, in that case, does anybody want to talk about the detail of the document now? Because I'd be delighted, but I don't believe most of us are sufficiently familiar with it to do that in a collection of people. Okay. Right. It's almost done, you see. Now, what happens next? As I've hinted, if you're not familiar with this policy development process, well, that's where it is. It's not very complicated, as long as you don't have to do anything. I've actually got to do something, so I have to learn some new tricks, but that's all right, I'll do that. Essentially, in a few hours, in a day or two, no, actually it'll be in a day or two, I will just announce to the list that we propose to put the document in like this. Notionally, there is some discussion, and if there's some real discussion, that's wonderful, we can make some further small changes. Then goes through the process this is another intermediate process, which is my problem, not yours. There's then a last call where it goes out to some more lists, and there is a chance for people to say, no, stop, this is not what anybody really wanted. And at the end of it all, it becomes a new right document with a new number, and the job's done. Does anybody want to interfere with that at all? Is there anybody who thinks this is a waste of time? Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. Okay, we'll do that. We are now substantially ahead of schedule, because that could have taken some time. Somebody could have said, I've read this paragraph and it's wrong, we should be saying something else. Nobody has said that, so we move on. You can change your mind later. Looking ahead, now we're not going to do this time. We could decide that we want to say what is good practice, to go back and think about it a bit harder. And there's a whole lot of stuff happened. The whole issue of email abuse has changed. But we'll come to some of the details in a minute. The notion of what is good practice has changed as well. Wright does things a bit differently now. Some of you may think that, I know who wrote the English words, and I suspect they're not all clear to some people whose native language is not very old-fashioned English. That's fair, that may need changing. And there may be stuff that just doesn't matter anymore. For instance, there's probably 6 pages on open relays, and we don't get open relays much anymore. That is to say, there are plenty of open relays, but the spammers have got better ways of doing things. So that's probably... Sorry.
As someone who just had to deal with the source listing because of a customer who intentionally set their Outlook to be an open relay, I respectfully disagree.
Okay, we have an argument. You failed to get to a microphone, so I will repeat some of this. It does happen, and yes, SORBS will get you, and you'll have to do some work. But it is not the normal way, it's not the most common way that the bad guys do it now. I think it's, so to some extent, you could wonder why SORBS is bothering. That's perhaps an overstatement, but you could. Thank you. The process is a little bit more complicated if we're going to make changes, because we have to agree what they are. Somebody has got to write some stuff and you know, edit a document and things like that. The volunteers can form an orderly queue later. But we could do that, and we can start it today if it seems appropriate later on. I do mention some of this stuff a bit later on. Or we could say, this thing is from a distant age, we just don't want a document like that anymore, we want something quite different. For instance, I wouldn't mind if the word spam didn't appear in things, because it's more generally, everybody knows what they mean. They happen to mean something different from what everybody else means, but they think it's difficult. It generally generates more heat than light, I think. So calling email abuse, well, it's a suggestion. We might emphasise that the whole business of spam and email abuse generally is a business issue. The technology is all very interesting, and that's why most of us are here, because we like, you know, thinking how you can outwit somebody else, but actually it's business outwitting that's the deal. Or as some people would say, it's a social matter. The other interesting thing is we might decide to look at some other sources of material. And there are one or two other things to say about that. We might decide, for instance, you know, the length of it. This is quite a long, wordy document. Not many people are going to sit down and read it unless their chief legal officer tells them to, or somebody like that. We might decide that we don't want chief legal officers to read this, we want somebody else to read it. I don't know who. And so it goes on. The other thing we could say is that the world is not short of people telling you how you should how you should resist email abuse. You can all find 10 places where it tells you what you must do about spam, why we don't get any viruses coming out of our network, or whatever it happens to be. And it may be that for Right to add another one, or to maintain another one, is no longer appropriate. So we could say that. Or we could say, this is a good one, but it needs something else. So we could pick something else up there. The other comments are fairly obvious. The process, if you're going to write something starting from scratch, is a longer one. Several people have got to do some work. Does anybody feel we need that there's some document missing from the world that we ought to actually produce? There's a man moving to the microphone, and he's going to say who he is.
I feel slightly bad about saying this, as I'm one of the people who has not done sufficient work on this document over the last 8 months, and certainly can't stand here now and say that I will be able to over the next six or so because of busyness and work. But I do believe that at the very least in the longer term we need to, I think rewriting it would be a good plan, possibly even as two documents or a document with two sections, the first one of which is nice and simple, and the longer one of which is more suited to chief legal officers and other such things. But I do think that we do need to do slightly more than just, if we are going to have a right document on this, then do more than just make some small changes to it. But unfortunately I'm not in a position at the moment to volunteer to do that, or certainly would only be as part of a larger group willing to do that.
Thank you, Brian. If anybody else is desperate to do that work, Brian did nobly volunteer some time ago when he thought and I thought that we would each have more time to do this properly. I now think it's more important to finish the job, even if it's not quite the job we hoped, which is why I've been through this sequence of things. If anybody has got time or you know, would like to contribute, just fragments on the email list, that would actually move things forward a bit. So thank you for that. The notion that we should perhaps have a smaller document and a larger one is interesting. I think probably it comes up later. I'm trying to be specific really about this thing at the moment. We have a small problem to solve, the thing is out of date. The best we can do is just do the minor updates and carry on with our lives, but we ought to bear in mind that the world might need some more advice, or in particular the right community might need some more slightly specific advice that we can do. Anything else about this? I'm not standing here just trying to embarrass people. I'm standing here because thoughts take a while. Okay. We can come back to it if anybody has some other things. This is perhaps more fun anyway. What's new in email abuse? I've just made up. I mean, sorry, I'm not suggesting that any of these things are actually new, but there is some, I perceive changes, and you'll probably think that the world has changed in slightly different ways. For instance, does anybody think they've been having less spam lately? Well, it's always worth asking. Now, actually, I get people walking into my office who say, I don't think we've had so much of this stuff recently. In some cases, it's because somebody has turned down the volume on their spam assassin or something like that. But actually, I think there may be other reasons why there's less of it crossing the oceans. I'm not sure. Does anybody want? Okay, well, who thinks there's more spam this year, now than there was 6 months ago? Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, a whole lot of people who don't know. Well, that's fine. If you don't know, it can't be that bad. A contribution, I think.
Hello, I'm Roland Perry from the RIPNCC. I think a slight change in the spam which I get to several personal domains of mine. It seems that the overall quantity is increasing, and just in case anybody's the slightest bit interested, I get about 20,000 a day at the moment. I think the quantity is going up. I also see it arriving at certain times of the week. Like, I think a lot of it's sent over the weekend, and that may be because people think that defences are down over the weekend or something. I'm not sure. The difference I see is a huge increase in what I would call dictionary attack spam. And because I operate various domains which are registered to me personally, I get to see all of the email arriving at those domains. And the amount of email arriving to Roland at my domains, which happens also to be spam, seems to me actually to be reducing. But the amount of spam addressed to abxyz.drddrdr at, and some of them actually do go on quite a long time, at my domain names, that is increasing enormously, and largely drowns out the spam that I get to various real email addresses which people in the old-fashioned way have scraped off various websites, Usenet lists and so on. I've let those addresses get out into the wild through. Sorry for rambling on.
Okay, thank you. That's one spot observation. Does anybody think that abuse messages are being more targeted? Roland was just saying they're not. They're getting scatter alphabet stuff. I sometimes think that there is better targeting. You can say?
I've seen emails from Carnegie Mellon. One of the things that I've noticed in my personal domain was simply that after it got hijacked as a source of spam, all of those addresses and random addresses became the target of spam. And so I'm getting that large number with exactly the spread that you talk about. And that may be an indication of having somebody having used your domain name in a spoofed header.
Okay. One of the ways that addresses get into the system is by being scraped off people's PCs. And I imagine that it's not quite clear to me what the step before that is. So I things that have been misused once are usually there to be misused again. That's what it comes to there. But in the case of mail that never got delivered to a, you know, to a desktop PC, that may not apply. I don't know. You haven't any explanation for this, really, have you?
I'm not sure that we're at... It sounds like we're talking about two different phenomena.
Okay.
What had happened was my domain, people had simply put my domain name, having gone through the domain name list, they simply selected cmills.com at random and said abc at cmills.com a non-signed spammer method, right. just in the to field, in the from field.
Right.
And so once that is, they've selected your domain as the, quote, imaginary source of the spam, then your domain has all, they've used all these names in your domain, and the first thing you'll notice is a whole lot of people sending mail to Postmaster at your domain saying, please stop spamming us. And then all of those addresses get added to other spammer lists.
Okay. Well, I think I stick to my story. I'm sorry, I missed half the point of what you said. Yes, I now see where it started. I think I'm probably still partly right that once these things have landed by that or any other mechanism on some compromised box, you will continue to see them.
Certainly.
Yeah. Okay, so there's more things. There's more things. Nobody's saying... I'm claiming there might be slightly less of things, but I don't know. Brian?
Brian is with HN again. There was a comment made in the plenary yesterday. I can't remember which exact talk it was, but the gentleman was talking about what he was describing as spear phishing, was the very directed phishing using information such as flight itineraries or otherwise which had been got. So the fish mail was not just a random you have an account with Chase Manhattan or otherwise, but was the booking you've just made with Air France with this particular itinerary needs you to ring up and give you your credit card number to check it or to change it or because your credit card bounced or whatever it happens to be. But it was a much, much more directed fish mail, so rather than just being the more generic type we've seen before. Now, it's entirely possible everyone's been seeing this for ages, but it was the first time I'd come across it.
Yep, that was... I can't remember exactly which of yesterday's talks it was either, but that was a good point made, yes. It reminded me of a story which everybody may know. Essentially, this was information which must have leaked out of a travel agent or somebody in the place of a travel agent, that the booking had been made from this email address, and probably some of the data about it as well. I'm reminded of some, I think it's probably an Eastern European country, I'm glad I can't mention which one it might have been, where somebody had got hold of flight lists, and people turned up at an airport to be met by a guy with a sign saying Mr. Tillotson. So, you know, I walk across this chap and get in his car, and actually he's nothing to do with what I think I'm going to. He takes me somewhere else, takes all my money, and then puts me back on the plane with only my shoes on in 3 days' time. Sorry, this is you may think it's not email abuse, it's abuse of practically everything else in about the same way. So yes, if information that is already fairly private gets out somewhere, it is quite dangerous. And if phishing has, you know, I think of phishing as a bit of a broadcast approach, but if it's being targeted much more carefully, then that's perhaps true. It may mean there's going to be less of it if they can make enough money without clogging up mail systems as well. Fair enough. Roland.
It's Roland again. You got me thinking, because phishing emails that I get, many of them are very targeted. So I get phishing emails to Roland at my domain names, not xyzabc@. So they're using a completely different source of these email addresses. They're not using the same ones that spammers are using. Otherwise, I'd get phishing emails coming to sales@info@, you know, so on and so forth. So I think that's quite interesting. And in particular, there's one sort of, perhaps the first phishing emails I got, I decided to take seriously, were eBay phishing emails. Your account has been stolen, or PayPal, eBay, whatever, your account has been compromised or whatever, please log in and change your password or whatever it is they're using. Well, oddly enough, my eBay account isn't Roland at anything. It's something else at, a domain that I don't use for very much else either. And so I can actually filter out the phishing attacks to which are PayPal, eBay type phishing attacks, and I've got a mailbox on my PC where all of those go into. And it just occurred to me that they're all addressed to Roland at. So there's a sort of targeting going on there.
I think that could be, it may be very suspicious. I think there's also a little bit of, despite what you've said before about what really does look like alphabetic soup rubbish, it's just nothing. I think they are trying first some plausible things. So, you know, Roland is only six characters, plenty. They don't do Rodney very much. Obviously, Roland's a more popular name. And, you can get to that. And it's having seen that it actually occurs in some valid addresses makes it even more appropriate to try that. A bit like sales, really. You know, sales is worth trying because there are a lot of, we know there are several places to have sales. And we know, too, that there are people, and they're actually quite interesting people, who've managed to get themselves short local parts to their mail addresses and things like that. So I that doesn't of itself, it may be a matter of detail, doesn't of itself suggest to me that eBay have been telling everybody who you are, although that's clearly quite possible.
That's not my
no, okay.
Because I don't use the word
rogue
in connection with eBay at all.
No, you didn't say that, you're quite right, yeah. Okay, so there are two separate things going on here. Yeah. So, well, okay. As I say, I my view of it is that we're getting better social engineering one way or another. The stuff, and I it's not just mail addresses. The whole thing looks, they make their living out of it. These things are still good enough to fool a lot of people, despite the fact that every newspaper and every comic and every ISP's web pages has been full of things saying don't do this. The guys still get through. It is still the way they make their living. So they have got better at it. I see this particularly in I think I may have a picture. It'll come up later. I worry about header forgery. I used to think I could work out by looking at a message header whether it was real or not, and I no longer believe that. I think I have to spend some time. I mean, some of them are easy in both directions. Some of them you can see complete rubbish in, and that's easy. Some of them look really pretty plausible, and all the context is okay. But really, that leaves me with generally, I suppose, a hard one once or twice a day where I don't know whether this means what it says or not. But it's not very difficult. I mean, the fact that I was able to see the mistakes means that if I was doing the mail abuse, I would have avoided them. But now the guys who are doing the mail abuse are avoiding them as well. They're getting better. Okay. Bounce manipulation, that again I see as a bit of social engineering. The bit I'm talking about anyway is social engineering. Some of the messages, given that they can't look really like messages from your grandmother, they make them look instead like messages from your service provider. Something went wrong, please read this. It's not quite so bad as phishing. It doesn't say, please do something about it. It just says, we are sending you a message because there was a problem, please read this. It just doesn't mean what it says at all. It's the usual fabrication. But it's plausible enough, again, for people to read it at the moment. So, okay, that this is all social engineering. We have had some hints that people are stealing real information in order to target things. People have just talked about that. Apart from that, I don't see a lot of new technology coming into email abuse. Now, have I missed something? Are there really new things happening that people are, I don't know, using different protocols or anything like that? I don't hear about it. Okay, so it's not necessarily true that this becomes a non-technical working group, but you have to accept that in a sense that the arms race is just going on. There's nothing very exciting about that bit. Anything else that people see happening? That the bad guys are doing? How many people here have sort of taken apart a botnet that was doing bulk mail, among other things? I suppose I've seen some bits, but it wasn't what I was trying to do that day. Have people actually had either found botnets with a substantial presence in their own network, or been a victim of their activities and had to do something about it in another network? Okay. Doesn't sound as if botnets worry people very much either. They worry a lot of people who write the newspapers. You know, they ought to worry us. Okay, that's all I get for developments by the abusers. Just a moment to plug the attendance list once more.
If anybody missed this for one reason or another, do I need to pass it around again? Yes.
All right. Well, now the sign of the angels. The first one is entertaining. Some of you will have heard of a man called Nigel Roberts in Scotland, which is a little-known part of the UK towards the upper end, who managed to sue some UK company, and I've forgotten the name of it now, Direct something, I think, and get a small amount of money back from them. This is a triumph because UK legislation is not highly thought of in the anti-spam world. It is not very strong. And he was cunning, and he was persistent, and he only got £300 back, €400 or €500 or something. But it's okay. He actually, they won't do it again. I nearly got him to come and talk about it at this meeting, but it's only a very short story. It wasn't worth getting him all this way for 5 minutes. So, I haven't heard of any others. No, there are one or two people who have been put away recently, but that's ongoing stuff. It was going to happen, and we just didn't know quite when. Are there any other interesting lawsuits related to email abuse that people want to bring to mind? In Europe, in the US, I think my impression is that Microsoft had a round of heavyweight stuff and haven't done much since, and nobody else has either. Actually, didn't AOL take somebody to court? I'm sorry, I haven't got the details. Australia? The Australians are fairly fierce on this stuff. The Canadians got somebody, I think. It doesn't come to very much, really. The people, well, you... The people who really make their money out of this, the money is too hard to follow because they are professional criminals and they're just good at that stuff. Which is a shame because a lot of people... We're going to get the wrong people all the time. Okay, the anti-abuse industry, I'll come back to in a minute. My attention's been drawn to a thing called the Internet Governance Forum, which doesn't look to... Well, who's heard of this thing? Okay. There's a handful of hands. Who thinks it's a good idea? One? Okay. Oh, no. Half people think it's a good idea. All right. Anybody like to tell us what they think it's really going to do? Because I don't know much about it. A volunteer. That's good. Meanwhile, the rest of us can all read the web pages, which are there. They don't say very much.
Jay Daly, the thing the IGF is going to do, hopefully, is stop the ITU getting too involved in the internet. That's its, hopefully, its primary purpose. It gives us an outlet for discussion at the international level about the issues that many countries are concerned with, without actually imposing new control structures or having people try to take things over.
Okay, thank you. And in that case, what's is the ITU initiative the same as the OECD one? There are a lot of people trying to take over the anti-spam activity, and I cannot remember where the ITU come into this. Do people know about the OECD attempt to take over the world? Oh, well, somewhere I have a URL for that. If you see something that says, I can't remember what it's called now, it'll come up somewhere else. It's in the list. If you've got the thing in front of you, then on the page of URLs at the end, it'll be one of those. Roland?
Yes, just a quick advert for the next working group session where I've got a short slot and we'll be talking in very general terms about the Internet Governance Forum. Where the Internet Governance Forum and spam intersect is that spam may be one of the items on the agenda at the first Internet Governance Forum. So the idea is that there should be a meeting which will conduct business, and these meetings may end up being every 6 months or once a year or something like that, and the first one's later on this year. The reason why spam is relevant is that of the probably three topics that will be on the agenda in October, spam may be one of those. We don't know this yet because the people who are going to form what they call a program committee, who are going to decide what's going to be on the agenda, those people have not yet been selected and they've not had their first meeting. So this is all conjecture, but people have put in suggestions over the last several months as to what topics should be on the agenda, and until now, spam has always seemed to have been a hot favourite. That doesn't mean it will be on the agenda, though. It's just a hot favourite.
Okay, thanks. It's probably one to watch out for. Exactly how you or I can make any difference to it is beyond me at the moment. The anti-abuse industry, which may call itself all sorts of other things, has been fairly active, and this may be the way the world goes. I'm not sure. Does anybody want me to, I think probably somebody will, want me to say something about good mail? Or specifically about good mail and AOL.
primed to have done clever filtering. Roland's done clever filtering.
It's Roland again. No, it's not clever filtering, it's just an observation harking back a little bit to what you were talking about on the last slide. I do content-based filtering, one of these applications, people have said there are dozens of them, that just counts the words and looks at the words and has a list of spam words and a list of non-spam words and gives your email a percentage. One of the things that frustrates me quite a lot as a user of email is the fact that that approach, along with, it also has built-in whitelisting, so I could put Rodney into my whitelist and your email would arrive with a spam score of 0%, whatever the words in it were. I find that when I buy things online, two things happen. First of all, the order confirmations or delivery advices or whatever that are sent to me are written by the same people who write the marketing messages, and therefore they get a very high spam score. Congratulations, you've bought your flight to Istanbul! Exclamation mark, whatever it is that's in them. They do not stand out from that kind of old-fashioned classic spam email. Secondly, they tend to come from unpredictable addresses. Airlines seem particularly bad at this. I've given up trying to keep whitelists of the senders of emails from airlines because they seem to use a different from address every time I book with them. So it's just those kind of two things together. Just thought, well, there's some random thoughts on filtering for you.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else seen things like that? Well, Roland obviously finds it irritating, and he was speaking in his capacity as an end user there, really, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm frustrated by the false positives.
Yeah, that's right. And it's clearly the business of a spammer to make sure that there are false positives and get as close as possible. Yeah, interesting. Brian, you can say.
Well, it's an unfortunate point that one of the easiest ways of filtering for spam, one of the greatest hit rates, is to filter on emancipation email content in mails. It gets an awful lot of hits. Unfortunately, the world and his wife, when it comes to marketing and or sales and or thank you for buying this product or this ticket or whatever else, seems to believe the only possible way to send an email is to use HTML. A thing which constantly amazes and baffles me, because it just needs text, but yet HTML is the way they seem to want to go. And an awful lot of people who are sending perfectly normal, non-spam emails seem to be ignoring the fact that whether it's fair for them to ignore it or not is no matter, but they will go, well, no, HTML is the way you should send email. And I'm getting emails these days which sometimes say, if you can't see this, you're obviously using an old-fashioned mail reader that can't understand HTML, it being mutt, and so you should upgrade to a better one so you can read our email. And yet that will get caught, when they do send it will get hit as a false positive quite often, because it looks like a spam as far as some of the best metrics we have are concerned.
Yep. Presence of HTML correlates really quite well with spamminess. Everybody says this, and it's a problem for everybody. Do people think that plain text and HTML as alternatives is in any sense helpful in this context? There are some very well known products that do it, of course. Okay. It's recorded as a problem. It is a problem, that's right. And it comes back, it's always the same thing, I'm afraid, that it's
sort of secondary aim if you're a bulk mail sender to make sure that people have to move from their present position to somewhere that you can get to them more easily. And at the moment they're doing fairly well on that. Anything else about filtering or stuff? Right. I'll leave sender authentication for a minute. Bounce suppression. SpamCop at least have made this an issue. Sorry, IronPort probably have made this an issue recently by bothering to say that a lot of the things that their people report appear to be what they call unsolicited bounces. And of course, all bounces are unsolicited. This really wasn't helpful at all. What they mean is a bounce of a message whose origin was likely to have been forged. People shouldn't do this. People shouldn't do any part of that. They shouldn't send stuff with misleading origin. But given that they do, the best that we mustn't go sending it back. I work for an academic network, and we have a lot of people there who have, you know, they're medium-sized businesses essentially, they're colleges or parts of universities, and they tend to have a couple of MX mailers and quite a lot of delivery mailers, and so they're apt to, and there may be some intermediate stages, but two is enough. If the MXs don't know what is actually deliverable at any particular moment, then they're in grave danger of accepting it and having to think afterwards what to do about it when it doesn't work. Either because they've then tested it and decided it's spam or it's got a virus or something, or the user has run out of quota or whatever it happens to be. And I think probably we need some firmer guidance on that stuff. Anybody got any sort of thoughts about this? All right. It's going to come up again, perhaps not here, but it will. I'm not going to talk much about these sender authentication things. Everybody should know something about them. And you probably need to have a bit of prejudice or at least some attitude to say, I really think this is a bad idea and I hope MSN don't do it because in the end somebody's going to do this in a big way, probably bigger than say Yahoo do at the moment. Yahoo and maybe. And it will it'll spoil some of our lives, I'm afraid. So SPF, essentially what that does is to make a comment on the appropriateness of the hop along which you receive a mail message. So it does something about the identity of the sending MTA, basically. I think it's being tweaked to do a little bit more than that now, but so. And if everybody did it, then something would be achieved. If only half of us do it, maybe something would still be achieved. Since at the moment it's way down from that, and it doesn't seem quite right anyway, I don't think that's going to fly on its own. But everybody ought to know roughly what that's about. Does anybody want to give a lecture on it or hear any more about it? Not from me. Okay. Same sort of things about DKIM. Now DKIM has at least got the benefit that some quite respectable people are going for it. Dave Crocker in particular thinks it's wonderful. And you have to take that seriously. Some of the same issues arise as for the other bits of technology for SPF. It's completely different, but it authenticates a different thing. But and I think it's probably true that it comes out of a better underlying design than SPF does. But again, it's not going to happen until an awful lot of people do it. Sorry, I was expressing an opinion about whether it's better or not. I'm not sure. Does anybody do either of these things? Anybody using SPF either to evaluate? So back to SPF, really. Anybody using that to evaluate connections? Okay. Nobody says they actually
have a mailer that listens and use SPF to mark stuff. Okay. I must have somewhere, because I see it, I don't know, perhaps I just see it in people's reports. What about actually putting up your own SPF records, so they're related to the mail you send? Have people done that? One? Okay, so when I talk about low, some, okay. Deployment is really pretty thin at the moment. And I don't want to be discouraging about that. I mean, it would unquestionably help a lot if it was very widely deployed. But so would almost anything. You know, it doesn't get very far. Anybody done anything with DKIM, which I know has only recently become stable enough for people to consider? Has anybody done anything with that at all? Oh, okay. Play with it. Yeah, okay. Any thoughts?
It's got problems with many documentation.
Documentation problems?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just speaking your words into a microphone, that's all. Yeah, go on.
Jonathan Lee, Business Unity. It's got a few problems at the moment, most of the documentation end of things. It's undergone quite a few changes, especially recently, and documentation things haven't caught up with it yet, and some code written for it as well haven't caught up with it. When that happens, it'll be usable, but until then, it's a bit of a mess.
And do you feel there's any way of sort of getting critical mass up for it to make it work?
The only reason that I've experimented with it and also that I publish SPF records is because various mail providers have, several ISPs have said, I think it's AOL, rather keen on SPF, have said that to be whitelisted by them, you have to publish the SPF records or use DKIM. That's the only reason I've been experimenting with it.
Okay. So that actually is a real way in which deployment is going to be, we shall say, deployment has been forced on us because one of the big providers insists on it. You can't, it's not quite so devious, if you think good mail is a devious thing for them to have done, as that. But there is some hoop you have to jump through to get mail through to some of the big providers. And if that really becomes true, you're going to have to do it. At the moment, they tend to be putting the stuff up as advisory. It's not interfering with the flow of mail very much. But one day somebody will try it, and it'll probably be somebody you just don't want to take outside on a dark night. You can't afford to. But we ought to keep an eye on this. Everybody ought to keep an eye on this, because something is going to happen, and it might be this one. Oh yes, I thought I'd put something else about this. I would expect people to have all sorts of funny opinions about this. I just outline roughly what happened. Does anybody think that impossible demands are being put on them? I tend to say to people, to some of my people, my universities and people, this one shouldn't have got out. What are you doing about it? And they say, oh, it's terribly difficult, you know, I don't think very much of that. I tell them to go away, try harder. If they come back and say, we thought we'd done everything, we don't understand how this one got through, well, that's fine, we can talk about that. And what I usually say is that people, once you've thought of a class of things that could possibly generate an unwanted bounce, you should stop it. If you haven't thought of something yet, that's fair enough, you haven't thought of it. Right, so the top couple of lines just say when this is usually a problem, when you've got a chain of machines down to delivery and the beginning of the chain doesn't know enough about what's happening further down. The standard way you're supposed to, well, I don't know, people have different views on how you should deal with that. There are some places where they, I think I'm probably exaggerating here, where they write down all the valid addresses on each of their machines and carry the piece of paper across to the MX machine and type them all in. I hope nobody actually does that, but there are places where they transfer flat files that are just lists of valid local paths, and quite honestly, if you do that, once a day, you've probably got enough, and it may be scalable to whatever you, well, it won't be scalable to a big ISP, but it will be scalable to a university probably of quite a large size. You can probably, everybody can probably do better than that, but some way of the of arranging that the MX box, the you know, the outward facing one, can delay sending a positive response code until it's found out something. It gives it a chance to reject stuff, and you know, you have to delay various things. And Mortar Ahead is the one that real geeks, I think, will love when it works properly. Don't hear people saying it works very much yet. But there are other things you can do. XSIM, for instance, will actually do a sort of dummy delivery before it accepts the mail from outside. And it, I don't know whether it does it by just running through the first part of the SMTP protocol and giving up, or whether it does a verify. But you know, there are things. Remember, this is inside your own network, so it's acceptable to do quite a lot of this stuff. Do people sort of, is this a solved problem? Does anybody care about it? Is it a bother to anybody? I suppose I should say. One, what is the nature of your bother? Sorry, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. It's not clear to me whether everybody thinks this is a solved problem, or whether everybody thinks it just doesn't matter, or what.
All of these things are irritations, really. As a registry, we have a lot of people sending out phishing messages pretending to be us, and they get bounced, a lot of them. And so we just end up with a lot of bounces coming in. That's the issue, really. I mean, it's not a lot. It's filtered out. It's dealt with. It's not a problem. But it'd be a lot easier if it just wasn't there.
So this is other people bouncing stuff. It's not... You haven't got...
Yes. Other people bouncing stuff.
Thank you. Is anybody sitting at the other end of that, where you're getting complaints that your SpamCop users, for instance, are telling you that you're sending out a lot of bounces? Okay. Well, if other people don't have this trouble, that's wonderful. If I were an email abuse perpetrator, it's probably something I would find a way of exploiting. So I think it needs fixing. One trick that I suggest to people, and afraid our position, I work in a cert team, security coordination, and we have to be very careful what we say to people. I'm mildly cautious here, because if we say things to our customers, they actually think it came down on tablets of stone, and they will go away and do it, even if it's impossible. You know, it's a great responsibility. But I have suggested to quite a lot of people that one thing they could do is right down the bottom here. Is that you run most of your processes, but the engine that's going to send a notification is obliged to check before it actually sends it that the thing that came in probably didn't have a forged originator. Now, there are various ways you could do that. Some exceedingly crude, you know, depending on the scale. If you don't have many of these notifications anyway, then you can pay a monkey to read them and only press the button for ones that really look good or something. If you really have still got the original message and you've managed to suspend your mailer for a minute, you're actually in the other department then. But if for instance you are accompanying the incoming message, if the incoming message has just had some stuff put on the top of it, then you can look at it. If you have annotated it as it came in to say this looked like spam but we thought we'd deliver it anyway, and then you find you couldn't. There are ways you can get this information. Failing that, it can just run it through the spam filters again, if you've still got the message. And I believe that's workable. And the one or two people to whom I've suggested it, who are in a position to do something, have gone away and they don't talk to me anymore. I don't know what that means, it's worked or not. But it's clearly logically possible. From where I am, I see quite a lot of this. And we've heard that at least one registry finds it a problem at the other end. Now those are bounces that shouldn't have been coming back to them at all. Okay. So moving off that stuff now. There are various people we should consider interaction with, and clearly, locally, other working groups is one. The interesting question of the abuse mailbox. I actually don't know where that's got to now. If I can just run over what our requirement and suggestion was, it was that default WHOIS queries would come up with a fairly unambiguous mail address that really was appropriate for abuse reports. Now, and so that, for instance, with fairly simple adaptations, things like SpamCop and SpamX and whatever else does this stuff could actually find the right answer rather than finding lots and lots of wrong answers. We nearly got there. Nobody wanted, well, the actual implementation in the RIPE database wasn't quite what we thought we'd agreed to, and there are some issues there which we'll try and follow through in the database working group. The IRT object is something that always raises its head at about this point. The IRT object is funny, but it's actually got a good piece of design in it, because you can stick it there and just put references to it from quite large chunks of address space. You know, if you've got in whatever size address space it is that you want to attach this thing to, you can just do it with one line somewhere, and it's all in place. And together with the notion of throwing away spurious mail addresses, that would actually be a fairly easy way. The fact that it's called an IRT object, which suggests that you've got to be a cert type person who will have two heads and things like that, and you've got to dream up some crypto keys before you can make thing work at all, and you've got to join some club and stuff, that unfortunately was bad press and quite bad management. That's not true. Anybody who wants to do it, you just do it. It's not difficult at all. It was difficult, but it's not now. A thing that seemed a lot easier to people was this abuse mailbox, which you might have thought could just be attached to all address information, all IP address information. Well, it can, but not directly. The inetnum object and the inet6num do not have a space for that. And I'm not quite, well, I am quite sure where that fell off the train. But that unfortunately means that the people who wanted it haven't got it. So you might like to look at that, or go and take some part in the database working group. That URL gets you something from which you can follow most of it. It's not, there isn't a single URL that really does it all. Okay, there are other people we might interact with. Large categories, you could go on. I have decided not really to do ever so much about this today. If anybody thinks there's a group of people we really, really should be talking to, I'd be interested to hear. Okay. We talked about an update to that old BCP. Is there anything else that, is there any other document that RIPE, which means you, and means me, and anybody else who can volunteer, should be making available to RIPE people, or for that matter to the rest of the world, that's about email abuse? That's a hard question. But if you do think of something, I would be interested to hear. I'd be even more interested to hear if you said, I really think RIPE ought to be saying something about this, and look, I've written half of it. That would be wonderful. It's also fairly improbable, but never mind. You will get hero points for that. Okay, any other kinds of documentation? It is really documentation I'm talking about. As I said earlier, there's really quite a lot of BCP advice. It's not all consistent. And of course, you don't make it any more consistent by putting up another one. On the other hand, if we have got something to say that's different, it needs saying. Okay, moving through. I did say that anything else you want to talk about is welcome. I'm disappointed that I've had to do most of the talking, but it happens sometimes. Anything else people want to talk about? See, this is good. 6 minutes to go. Any other business? And this is going to be the stopper. I can.
Forgive me if this is in your recommendations for update of Rite 206 already. I was trying to pay attention to you rather than reading the document. I limited myself to doing a few searches on likely words. But there are two things that we have adopted where I work. And unfortunately, they're reactive, not proactive responses to the spam problem. One of them is... XM is really nice about allowing you to put arbitrary extra headers in the...
You said XM?
XM, yeah.
Yep.
It is very nice about allowing you to put arbitrary extra headers in. And one of the things that we have added is the authenticated ID, since we require SMTP auth when people are sending stuff, which is very nice for streamlining our trackback of problems to a particular individual. So when you send something, the actual ID that you authenticated with, rather than just, you know, whatever email address you had in your SMTP session, goes in there. The second thing is, and I'm constantly surprised that more people aren't doing this, is we have the logs. Use the logs, distill the logs, look for top talkers every day. And if you see somebody who's sending more than whatever you've established as a benchmark number, as a reasonable number of emails for somebody to be sending in a day, for heaven's sake, investigate it. Talk with your business case people, establish a number where you say, this is a number above which we assume that it's prima facie evidence that somebody's doing something bad. And we shut down their account until we talk to them. And, you know, we have that number set at about 500 messages. And very rarely do we have to actually shut down someone's account who turns out not to be doing something bad.
Do you have two thresholds, one where you ask a question and one where you just turn it off?
I think that We do, but it's not formal. We leave for our level 2 support people who also watch the telemetry, and if they see something where someone has sort of a sustained sending a couple hundred, 300 messages a day, they might look into it and give them a call. And they don't have to do it themselves. They assign one of the level 1 people to do it.
Okay, those are good thoughts. Thank you. Logs and reading logs or processing logs are interesting questions.
And we do block 25, so of course anything that's going to go out is going to be going out through logs.
Okay, you've got a place where it will be logged. That's the first requirement. But I think I don't know if this is true. I mean, any people with consumer user populations who do not, now I must phrase this carefully. Are there any people who don't block any user connections to port 25? I would have thought not. Are there any people who block all user level connections to port 25? I wouldn't be surprised if that was nil as well. I don't know an easy question to ask about the things in between. This is an idea.
Well, what we put as our distinguishing metric is we charge very little extra. We charge a few dollars Canadian extra for a static IP address. And we are saving a few dollars by using dyingdns.org, and we're running a mail server on a dynamic IP address. Is an interesting corner case, but it fails the plausibility test for us. And we say, pay the extra few dollars for a static address. If you ask nicely, we'll give it to you for a couple of months for free, but maybe if you can't play within those guidelines, you need to be someone else's customer.
Okay, thank you. There seems to be no other business, and there's no other time either. I always think about these things. You know, what are we here for?
I just remind you of a piece of ancient history. This working group was set up to do two things. One was to sort of focus concern in the right community, and to produce some advice and things. The other was to set up a marvelous centre where everything in Europe, all the spam problems in Europe, would be fixed by people who were very fierce and sat there and did things. I didn't believe that was practicable at the time, and I don't think it's practicable now. But you know, it just makes you, remembering that makes you think that somebody actually wanted something different from a working group at that time. You know, we ought to think why we come and sit in a room. We're all nice people, it's not a problem, but we ought to think why we do it all the same, and do the stuff. And it, I mean, I'm inclined to think that direct action, you know, setting up a response centre is probably not for us to organise. But you could say otherwise. I don't think we need to produce the ultimate appliance that fixes it all, because lots of people have tried that and they've all failed. The other things we might conceivably, particularly tutorials and advice. I think we probably can do that, but we have to decide what advice we're going to give and who needs tutorials. Okay, and the rest is pretty much the same. It is always possible to write a highly specific agenda, but generally I don't think people want to see that, so I put out a fairly standard agenda and fill in the gaps and stuff. The crucial thing is, of course, if people want to really hear a long essay about some particular thing, then you should say so. Anybody should say so. If anybody has a particular thing they want to talk about, that's important as well. And the two things are not always independent. And that's really all. Thank you very much. We can go and have our whatever's next. Tea. Thank you. Oh, yeah, sorry. If you're just sitting looking at something, you're not going to write those down now. They are all on in the copy of this that's on the web pages. Some of them might surprise you, but they can surprise you later rather than now. Thank you very much, people.